Okay, let's take a different approach. You're not allowed to use a resume anywhere, ever, or fill out a generic application. Mm-hmm. What would you do? Well, first, you'd have to go identify some companies worth finding. You'd have to do some research and find the hiring manager's email address. You'd have to find something that they uniquely value that you think you can bring to the table. You'd have to do a little bit of sleuthing and grunt work, and then you create something for them. And once you do that, the process of doing it has this magical transformative power. It's almost like it turns people into like individualist libertarians on accident.
Yes, because you have to be so much more self-aware while you're...
Yes. Yeah, you got seven shoes. Yeah, you got plastic boots.
Y'all got cocaine eyes. Yeah, you got stupid jive. Can't you hear me knocking on your window? Hi, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. It is Monday, July 20th. You certainly know my guest today. Isaac Morehouse is, of course, the founder of Praxis, a startup apprenticeship program that I somehow find a way to mention in almost every episode of School Sucks podcast. And currently, Isaac is the CEO of Crash, a career launch platform that we're going to be discussing in depth today. Isaac and I first connected back in 2016 when I appeared on his show, the Isaac Morehouse podcast, and we've been, you know, in touch since then. Go to schoolsucksproject.com and search the archives if you enjoyed today's conversation. Isaac and I have numerous discussions there. Our last was down in Charleston, South Carolina at the Praxis headquarters with TK Coleman. That was one of my favorite shows from all of last year. If you want to learn more about Isaac, please go to his website. It is isaacmorehouse.com. And we're going to be spending some time in this conversation with the Crash platform. So if you want to check that out as well, it is crash.co. Today's conversation is for, number one, people or parents of people who have a career launch in their near future. Number two, people who are looking for an innovative way to relaunch the career or open new career doors. And number three, all of the dedicated folks who are always looking to alert and convert others to new and better ways of doing things in education and continuing education. And of course, achieving career and life goals as a result of that education. I credit Isaac as being one of the most enthusiastic and inspirational higher ed disruptors that we have had the pleasure of collaborating with here at School Sucks. Thanks to the Praxis program, many have already realized, and I hope many more will realize in the near and far future, that a fulfilling career is possible without committing four of the most precious years of your sweet young life so far, plus an outlay of maybe up to, 100 times more money than what you've actually made by the age of 17. Oh, and you're also going to gain 20 pounds of fat. 20 pounds of fat in just your first year of this little endeavor. So there you are with your 32-inch pants and your new 36-inch waist. And what's your pants budget like when you're $100,000 in debt? It's not a lot. If what I just laid out there sounds preposterous, I'm talking, of course, about college. And yes, am I injecting some of my own personal experience with college into like a generalization? Sure. Yeah. Maybe you get done in 4.5 years. Maybe it costs you 78 grand instead of 100. Maybe it's a 3-inch waist expansion instead of 4. You know, it varies. It varies for sure. And for our purposes here, if you don't need to go to college, what are you doing sitting there in high school then? Seems like a waste of your time. Praxis, Crash, and other innovations like them have created a kind of chain reaction that I'm really excited about, helping to expose the pointlessness of various levels of education for many, but not for everybody, but for many, many people. There are other ways. There are better ways. Perhaps they're for you. You will learn more today. So I'm very pleased to welcome back to the show my friend, Isaac Morehouse.
Yeah. Isaac, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back, Brett.
I heard you get threatened with the guillotine.
I had this segment on Fox News talking about Praxis and Crash, and some guy on Twitter just started going after me. And I normally don't respond to this kind of stuff, but it just seems sort of fun to respond. He was just like, I don't know why his first tweet was, Isaac Morehouse and Crash and Praxis tagged my companies are buddying up with Fox News. I heard Isaac is on vacation with Tucker Carlson right now. I'm like, what? I don't even know Tucker Carlson. Like, it was so weird. And so I responded. I was like, no, I don't know Tucker personally. They asked me to come on. I've been on a few times. I've also been on CNBC and other networks, and I'll go talk about my companies to anybody who will listen. Well, then he just went off. He kept responding like, you've sold your soul for money. Fox News is evil. I can't believe you went on there. That's like going on, you know, Nazi radio network or whatever. And I responded like, hey man, I don't watch any news. I don't support any news. I love to talk about the mission of my company, helping people launch careers. We're not enemies, bud. Have a good night. And then he's like, if you go on Fox News, you are my enemy. It's Bastille Day. Good timing. Get ready for the guillotine.
Is that your first time being threatened with execution?
I think so. I've had some like misspelled, badly worded, like YouTube comments, I think, in the past that have been like, I hope you die or something, but sort of more trollish. This was like, I think if this guy had enough, you know, mob momentum behind him, he'd be like ready to drag me outside and execute. I don't know. Maybe it's just internet courage. Who knows?
Well, things are getting pretty French revolutiony out there. It is kind of the time.
And here's the thing that's weird about it. Like, this whole guilt by association concept is just such a illogical, like incoherent, slippery slope. Because it's like, or like silence is violence or whatever. It's like, if, you know, his example, let's say there was a Nazi radio station, and let's say I lived in Nazi Germany, and, you know, Goebbels himself said, you want to come on? And I got to come on and talk to millions of people about my belief in freedom. Right. I would do it. Yeah. I'm not supporting what I'm like, I will say what I am willing to back up. Everything I have ever said publicly and privately, I am willing to defend and be known for and own and go to bat for. I do not feel like if the New York Times publishes a quote by me, that means that I endorse everything that's ever been published in the New York Times. Good God, you know?
Right.
Or even in the reverse, if Praxis publishes a blog post by somebody and that blog post is Crash is about content that we stand behind, that doesn't mean that we stand behind everything else that person has ever done or written or said or believed at all. We stand behind what we publicly stand behind. And like, to me, if you get caught in that game of, look, Fox News advocates all kinds of stuff that I think is stupid. So does every other news channel. So does pretty much every other blog. Brett, I would guess that there are things you've said on this podcast in episodes past that I might not agree with. That's possible, right?
Possibly,
but am I afraid to come on here and talk about what I do believe in? No. So I just think that that whole stuff is crazy. I think it's dumb to be afraid of it, but I think you have to just boldly own what you want to say and not worry about fear of guilt by association.
Okay, so at the risk of a tangent that takes us way away from my outline for this show, do you see any effective way of untangling that other than doing what you just said, which is people having the courage to basically say, no, this is my piece and I'm going to speak it? I think we see like a celebrity culture, an entertainment culture, where people are very quickly beaten back into place or into compliance, like ideological compliance by these kinds of mob threats. And I think that sends a signal that, okay, well, these threats, it works with all the most influential people in society. So we can just keep using this as a tactic to silence people.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like, what are the options? Let's just assess the options. If somebody comes after you or you're afraid that they might come after you because of something like what I did, let's say I have a conversation with someone or get retweeted by someone or go on someone's podcast who, you know, believes things that offend people or something. The options are to apologize and say, I made a mistake and disavow, in which case you're done. You're already dead. You have lost. You can't ever apologize enough. and trying to placate the kind of people who will be offended by these 7 degrees to racist Kevin Bacon or whatever, you can't win apologizing to those people. So that's not going to do you any good. And in fact, it's only going to cause more and more and more and ongoing stuff. If you run away and hide, I don't think that works either. I don't think that you really get any benefit, because as soon as you pop your head back out again, that threat's going to loom. I think you just simply own what you say, what you do, and never pretend to own or to stand for or represent or advocate any third party movement, person, or whatever. Like, if I have somebody on my podcast or if I go on theirs, I'm only willing to back up the things that I say and the questions I ask them, and that's it. And just staying with that, I don't think it necessarily means you won't suffer or get attacked or whatever, but you'll be able to be at peace, right? Like, right. If I get so-called canceled for being true to myself, so be it. Like, I have learned to value my, my core values more than my reputation. I am willing to suffer reputation death. Making peace with that, knowing that I may be misunderstood, I may be treated as a villain, I may go down in history as a horrible person, and that may be completely based on falsehood. I have made my peace with that possibility, and that doesn't threaten me anymore. And the minute you do, you have this Zen-like ability to just unapologetically, you don't have to rile people up on purpose or be like, go out there and talk about how people are trying to cancel me and I'm so scared and I'm going to preemptively, accuse them of trying to cancel me and all this. Just be what you are, own it, and don't worry. And what I found is when you do that, like, the only people who I see really suffering from cancel culture are the ones who are truly scared of cancel culture. And the ones who are fearless don't seem to suffer.
Right. That is a very empowered message that's going to tie in with some of the things we're going to talk about today. So I like that. But before we get to that, I did want to ask, what's that whole experience like? Because you were just on this show last night. Is it pretty frantic? Do you have any dialogue beyond just like that 4-minute segment? Or is it like, here's a guy who feels the same way about me, but he knows more than me. Guy who knows more than me, go.
It's absolutely crazy. So I think I've done 7 or 8 national news appearances over the last 3 or 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And all of them but 2 have been live. 2 of them have been pre-recorded segments, which tend to be a little longer, but then they'll edit parts out. And they usually edit out my favorite parts. But this is how it goes. And I've been invited on probably 15 or 20 times, but I've turned down a few of those, but several of them get canceled last minute. So here's how it goes. I'm sitting here, and I haven't pursued any of these. They've just come to me. I'm sitting here, I get an email or a text, and it's random. It's different every time. It's usually a different producer every time. Hey, this is Liz from Tucker Carlson Tonight. Here's a link to an article, and it's like, Harvard says they're going to charge full tuition even though they're not meeting on campus. Would like to have you come on Tucker's show to talk about this, maybe tonight or tomorrow night. Are you down for it? And then I'm like, sure, I'm down for it. Okay, where are you located? Well, I'm in Charleston. Okay, you'd have to go to this remote studio. Do you need a driver? No, it's 10 minutes away. I don't need a driver. Okay, great. I'll let you know if we're confirmed. Then like a couple hours before, or sometimes a day before, but usually not more than 12 hours. Okay, great. We're going to go on, be at the studio at this time. And we'll get you going. And I'm like, and I used to ask, can you give me some more details, talking points, questions? Right. And they would always just repeat the original thing. Here's a link to an article. We're going to talk about this. And then they're like, what's your bio? And then I just give them my bio. So I just have to sit there and I'll go for a walk and I have to think through all the possible questions they could ask or ways that they could frame it up. And I've had segments that have lasted 1 minute and I've had them last 5 minutes and I don't know how long it's going to be. And I don't think they do either because it's live. And so like, depends on how the other guests went, depends on what other news items pop up. If a politician farts in between when it was scheduled and when it goes live, they're like, oh, we're going to push it to tomorrow because we got to cover this wall to wall. Right. So like, So I go in, I don't even know if it's going to happen. I show up at this studio here in Charleston and I'm sitting in this tiny room and it's like all dark and there's really bright light shining on me and I can't see the screen. I can't see the person interviewing me. I can't see myself. I can't see anything. I don't know what they're showing on the screen when they set it up. I don't know what's on the title. I'm just looking at a little piece of tape glued, taped below the camera and I've got an earpiece that's on a slight delay and that's kind of quiet and staticky. And I'm sitting there and then I just hear them frame it up. And I've been on where they will frame up the segment completely differently than they emailed me. Right. One time they emailed me and they were like, let's talk about kids who are building careers without college. Here's a link to an article about that. And I'm like, cool. And I go on, I think this was Fox and Friends in the morning or maybe a business show on Fox Business. I go on and they're like, whatever that senator or representative name is, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or whatever, yeah. AOC. AOC says that socialism is good and a poll shows that X number of college students agree with her. Is socialism taking over college campuses? Here to talk about it, Isaac Morehouse. And I'm like, this is not what I came on here to talk about. So I had to like immediately pivot it. So I hear the setup and I'm as new to what they're going to say as you are. They just right. frame it up and then they intro me and then they ask me a question and I don't know what it's going to be and I don't know how long I'm supposed to go. And so I usually just start firing away with whatever comes to my mind to say and hope for the best.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted to know what to prepare for in case the world ever gets so crazy or the state of schooling or higher education gets so crazy that they're reaching out to guys who host the School Sucks podcast.
Dude, we got to get you on there, man.
It could happen. We could get there. I mean, my goodness. So one more news item before we started talking about Crash. You were the founder of Praxis. We've obviously talked about this plenty on School Sucks in the past. I saw a post from the current CEO, Cameron Sorsby, saying that they are currently giving $1,000 to anyone who will commit to not going back to college. I just wanted to get your input on this development and what you know about it.
Oh my gosh. I love it. I was so proud of those guys, Cameron, the new CEO, and Mitchell, the new COO, who are both Praxis alumni who have taken over running the program. And I'm still on the board and I'm still, involved in Praxis, very invested in their success and excited about it, but I'm not involved at all in the day-to-day. So I thought this was a brilliant move, kind of a trend-jacking move, because everybody's talking about with COVID, all these college students are pissed off that they've just been informed by their campuses, no one's able to come back to campus for the fall semester. You're just going to tune into Zoom classes, but tuition is not going to be reduced at all. You're going to pay full tuition. And so a ton of college students are like, what that, like more than ever realizing the silliness and questioning the value of college. And so I think Praxis was like, hey, this is a great moment to get some of those fence sitters. Originally, they were like, the first five people to do this, we'll give you $1,000 to drop out.
Right.
And they got so many people that they were like, all right, we'll extend it till the end of July. So I think it's just a great move and a great way to signal that the incentives are aligned in a program like Praxis. Like Praxis has to get you to get a successful job or else we lose. And that's not at all the case with college. And so it's a great way to highlight that difference.
Right. So do you know anything about the feedback they've received so far or how many takers they've had?
I don't know specific numbers, but I know that between that offering and the news segment, Cameron also had a news segment earlier last week that they have had a massive surge. I couldn't tell you the numbers, but I know they sent me a screenshot of their homepage and the current people all visiting just kept like shooting up during that segment. I know that they've got a lot of demand.
So let's move on to talking about your current project, which is Crash, basically a career launch platform. Your best soundbite on Fox last night was burn your resume, quote. I wanted to talk a little bit about what gives you the confidence in the model that Crash is promoting that you think that is sound advice right now. And so I guess we would start by just going through what exactly Crash does, since we haven't really explored that in much detail on this show before. And then I'll probably have some follow-up questions about how that process actually works.
Yeah, so Crash is a platform. It's like a premium tool for active job seekers. So if you're on a job and you're trying to get hired, you jump on Crash and you can create customized, tailored pitches to each company with video of you pitching yourself to the company, all the tech items and software tools that you know how to use, a list of projects that demonstrate skill in specific ways. You can customize and mix and match these tailored video pitches to each and every company. And then you manage the entire process of researching companies, building pitches for them, sending the pitches, sending follow-ups, booking interviews. You manage all of that on a dashboard where you have all of your pitches. And so it's essentially like a tool like a salesperson would use inside a company, but you're running the sales process of your job hunt. So instead of going and clicking apply 100 times and uploading the same resume to every job, which has a, I ran the numbers on this, it has a 0.007% chance of getting you a job. Here's how I came to that number, by the way.
Okay.
Only 15% of jobs are filled through applicants that come in from job postings. So 85% of them are filled by like somebody internally, or somebody just says, hey, you should talk to my friend, and they go and reach out to that person. So if you're applying to a public job posting already, there's a very low chance that, you know, anybody who applies to that posting is going to get the job, just 15% chance. But then of the people who apply, I think it's like 200 applications per one offer. And so when you combine those two, it's, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it comes out to 0.007, like 0.007% chance that sending a resume, and this is how most people apply to jobs. They go scan indeed.com or AngelList and they just click apply, and they just have like their same resume or their same paragraph that says, dear sir or madam, I have 5 years experience, hire me. And they just click that and they just send that hundreds of times and they never hear anything back. They don't know what's going on. They don't get any interviews. And so the crash approach, the reason we say burn your resume, it's kind of like burn the ships behind you, right? You have to let go of this belief that having that resume to just blast around generically is going to do anything for you.
It's absolutely not.
If you just burn it, then what does it force you to do? It forces you to get creative. And so our approach is to go deep rather than broad, to pick, start with 5 or 10 companies that you really think are interesting. And you research them and you dive in, even if they don't have an advertised job posting, you research, you figure out some, you really get to know their product, their customer, listen to the founder on podcasts, go follow their Twitter account, read their blog post, and then build something just for them that can't be faked, that can't be copied and pasted to everyone else. And the difference from a hiring manager standpoint of getting a tailored pitch that says, hey, Isaac, I absolutely love Crash. I heard you on the School Sucks podcast. Your vision resonated with me right away. You know, I went ahead and I looked at your webpage and I noticed that there's an opportunity to create a landing page specifically for homeschoolers. I went ahead and mocked one up. I would love to help you out on the marketing side. Let me know if you have 15 minutes to chat, right? Like if I get that, I owe that person at least a response. Because I'm going to be blown away. They took time. It's a costly signal. They took the time to be interested in me. Contrast that when I posted to AngelList, hey, we're hiring a marketing role. I got 180 applications. And I said in there, send me a pitch. Don't just click apply on AngelList. Only 3 of the 180 followed those instructions and sent me a pitch. Oh, boy. And all the others either sent nothing. It just said, interested in all roles at your company. Or it said, hey, Isaac, I have 12 years experience. I this, right? And imagine if you're trying to win a date by being like, hey, here's 10 reasons I'm dateable.
Yep.
Call me, right? It's like, no, you show interest in them. You say, hey, you're fascinating to me. You're interesting. I want to learn more about you. Would you want to get coffee? And it's the same with hiring. And so that's the whole concept behind burn your resume. Take the time to demonstrate skills. You can't, no longer are people going to be impressed with some bullets that say, you know, worked here 2 years, got a degree here, leadership skills. You know, people are like, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. So really taking the time to pitch, if you pitch 10 companies with a tailored pitch, you're going to get greater returns than if you blast out 200 generic resumes. And so that's the approach that we kind of enable people to, you know, to do with some tools, with a community, with a little bit of support.
Absolutely. So there's that empowerment thing that I previewed 10 minutes ago, right? This is really like breaking out of a permission mentality.
Yes.
And also like asserting your individuality in like, this is what I want, right? To target companies and provide them value up front. So, you know, in the first 10 episodes of this show that I ever did, I said, look, the 3 hidden lessons of school are obedience, conformity, and apathy. It shows up in young people continuing their education, right? We don't even need to go into college. We've talked about that so much on this show, but I felt like that was something that you addressed with the work you did with Praxis. And of course, it shows up in the job market, right? Where you give special instructions and still people are so obedient and conformist to the process of just doing this thing, like factory work that you learn in school. So they just do that same process over and over and over, basically ignoring the special instructions.
Think about like the quantity over creative, innovative, quality mindset too. So in school, a really common thing is you're assigned a paper, Mm-hmm. And what comes with a writing assignment? A minimum paid requirement, right?
Yeah.
It's like you have to have a minimum length. And so you just have to fluff it up with as much crap as you can.
Yep.
And it's like a quantitative, it sends the signal to young people that to prove your intelligence, you just have to maximize quantity of low quality output, of low quality signal. Right. And so people follow this through to the job market. And they think about it too with the credentials that they amass. The more degrees, the more honors classes, quantity, 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 you can prove, just keep blasting more and more signal. And so they go on the job market and they're like, what does it mean to be on the job hunt? It means every day I apply to the maximum number of jobs that I can. And it's like, again, if you were trying to win a date with somebody by just blasting out the maximum number of one-page synopses of your personality, like that is a really low quality way to go about the process versus getting to know a few people and then, you know, pursuing somebody with some real interest. And so when you go about it, the crash approach, it's like suddenly you can't play the victim. Cause it's common to hear people be like, oh, I'm on the job hunt. It's just tough out there. It's like, well, how long have you been on the job hunt? Oh, like 3 months. So what does it mean to be on the job hunt? Well, I go on Indeed and I click apply a bunch of times. And then I don't hear anything back. And so I have no idea if I'm doing something wrong or not. I just assume it's the market. It's the economy. It's not my fault. I'm doing my best. If you say, okay, let's take a different approach. You're not allowed to use a resume anywhere, ever, or fill out a generic application. Mm-hmm. What would you do? Well, first, you'd have to go identify some companies worth finding. You'd have to do some research and find the hiring manager's email address. You'd have to find something that they uniquely value that you think you can bring to the table. You'd have to do a little bit of sleuthing and grunt work, and then you create something for them. And once you do that, the process of doing it has this magical transformative power. It's almost like it turns people into like individualist libertarians on accident.
Yes, because you have to be so much more self-aware while you're doing it. You have to ask yourself all of these questions like, okay, what do I hate doing? What am I not good at doing?
What's worth putting in the time and energy? You realize that a lot of the jobs you've been applying to, you wouldn't even want to work there if they offered it to you. And you find that out if you have to spend an hour building a project for them. You find out which companies make you excited to do that and which ones don't. And just suddenly it's like, I've seen people do this even when they haven't gotten an offer. They build a pitch or a project for a company and they feel so empowered. They learned through the process. Like I had to teach myself Webflow to build this landing page for Airbnb. And then they tweet it out and they don't get into Airbnb necessarily, but they get all these other people being like, whoa, that's really cool. You did that. Hey, I know a guy who's hiring. Hey. And suddenly like, they feel like they're in the driver's seat and they get that mindset shift and take ownership. And that's really the secret subversive part. And this is the same with Praxis. And it's even more subtle with Crash. That's like, what I'm really doing is trying to set people free, trying to help people be free and live as self-owners in their life. And the way I feel like we can do that with a product that can scale, where you don't have to have any ideological belief. You don't have to sit and listen to a lecture where I tell you what I think is a good belief system. Instead, I just say, here's a product that helps you job hunt better. And in the process of using the product, you're transformed into somebody who's just a little more self-actualized. And that's kind of what we're going for.
Absolutely. So I heard you mention somewhere, I started to bring this up a second ago, but this Venn diagram idea, right? So what I really like here is there's this input-output thing, or there's input-process-output, because that process in between the two is really, really important, where you're living very consciously and you're learning these things about yourself, and you're deciding what you're going to take and put into the world, right? So the Venn diagram that you mentioned somewhere, maybe it was on my show, maybe it was in a talk you gave, is like, what can you do that actually has value? What do you, you know, what don't you suck at and what don't you hate doing? And the intersection of those things is like the unique value proposition that you should try to make somewhere where you want to be.
Yeah. So the fun little tidbit, the Crash logo actually comes from that very concept. So it's the shape of the intersection of a Venn diagram. Mm-hmm. And then it's just rotated on its side a little bit. The Venn diagram you mentioned, stuff you don't hate, stuff you don't suck at, and stuff people are willing to pay you for. And the reason that I feel like that's so important early in your career is because if you start as a young person and you say, okay, I'm going to do things I love, or I'm going to follow my passion, for the vast majority of people, that's way too hard because you don't know what it is yet. Like right. What you're going to be doing in 10 or 20 years probably doesn't exist yet. You may end up loving something that you've never even heard of yet. You're going to have to, like, people think they hate sales, for example, because they just imagine a used car salesman. And they have no idea of all the different forms it can take. And I've met people like that who are like, I have no interest in sales, and they end up loving and crushing it in a sales role at a startup. And so if you focus on things I love, you just don't have enough information. So instead, I like to take the negative approach and say, let's treat it more like a sculpture. And to find what I love, we just have to chisel away the stuff that I don't love.
Perfect. Process of elimination. You know, I mean, that's really how my career was, where I went to school for broadcasting because I said, you know, I want to get in front of like cameras and microphones and talk. And college taught me like what a pain in the ass that was going to be, you know, and how hard that was going to be to get your foot in the door in any meaningful way with the permission mentality that we've been giving you through your schooling for the last 16 years. And this was almost 20 years ago. I didn't know any better, you know? So I went with it, and I kind of retreated from that desire to, you know, be in broadcasting in some way. So a door opened to work in education. And I said, oh, maybe this fulfills a lot of the same needs. So I started like, oh, look, I can stand in front of this room and it's not broadcasting. There's only 9 people in here, but I'll take it. I did that for a while. And it was kind of like learning all of these things that I didn't like about it and making lots of like lateral moves from one job to another until pretty much everything that I didn't want to do and that I wasn't good at doing was removed from the equation. That was a long process of trial and error and discovery.
It's like pick a major, pick a track, and then you just follow some path and get there. And like, I think you see this the worst with law school. Oh, you're good at arguing and debating. You like politics. You should go into law school. And it sounds prestigious and it sounds good. And so you go through 3 years of law school, you come out with $250,000 in debt. The only job you can work that will help you pay off those loans is a law job because they're high paying. You go get one. And then you realize for the first time that you hate practicing law. And if you would have just did a little bit of trial and error, gone and been like, hey, can I job shadow you for free for a month to some lawyer at a law firm? And then be like, oh God, I don't want to do merger and acquisition paperwork all day, right? Like getting out into the field and just experimenting and trying things is so key. And I think, you know, you're a great example. You said you realized, okay, I'm going to try this because unless I hate it, like I feel like when you're young, say yes to as many things as possible. And sure. The further you go, that list will shrink and shrink and shrink until you're saying no to almost everything. And you've limited it down to the things that are your sweet spot. But so you try it out, you realize you hate it. And by removing things that you hate, you get tighter and tighter. And then you'll also find that things that you're good at, you start to find this overlap where you're like, hey, I love doing this podcasting thing. And also, I have kind of comparative advantage in this. I'm one of the few podcasters who really is good at the audio production component, and I can do a lot of special things there that other people can't do. Or I have this unique take on education and philosophy that, you know, is different than other people. I am very skilled there relative to the average podcaster. And so you find these intersections of stuff you don't hate, stuff you don't suck at, and then stuff things people are willing to pay you for. And I think that process, just approaching it playfully without the stress of like, I got to pick something and then like go get hired in that thing. Instead, just like go after any opportunity that doesn't suck, that you know, that you don't hate, and that is somebody's willing to pay you for, and just play around and eliminate things. That's so much more productive to me.
Absolutely. All right. So we've actually created two intersection points in this conversation. So the first one is the thing that you should consider pursuing, which is like maybe, you know, they say follow your passion or do what you love, but the best you can do at a young age when you don't have a lot of wisdom is just move in the direction of it. But a formula for doing that is like, what am I good at? What provides value? What do I not hate doing? Because a lot of people might only take two of those things. I'm good at this and it provides value. I guess I'll just, you know, bite the bullet and do it. So that's one intersection of something that you should pursue. But the other intersection is like this unique opportunity of combining skills to create something new that maybe nobody else has done yet. So I think you were getting at that too, right?
Yeah. And that's one thing that a lot of people miss if they only read job postings and they read them as if this is the company's literal perfect and final word on the only thing that they will ever need. And you think about, like, if you've ever been in the market for a house or an apartment, you have your list that you give your realtor. You're like, here are the five things that I want, you know, location, three bedrooms. I want a screened in porch and blah, blah, blah. And anyone who's ever done this knows whatever house you end up with is not going to have all five of those things. It's going to have like three of them, but then it will have two other things that you didn't even know you were in the market for that outweigh those because you hadn't thought of them before. Oh, well, this one doesn't have a screened in porch, but it has this amazing outdoor patio and fireplace. I guess I can do that. Companies are similar. They don't know how to perfectly encapsulate what they need. They know they need problems solved. And some of those are very specific. Okay, I need you to onboard 10 customers every day. But then there's all these other things, like they just need value created. And if you're like, hey, I'm really good at coding, but I'm not good enough to go get a senior developer role, and that's all they're hiring for, I'm okay at customer onboarding. I can do that, but I'm not like the best at it, but I really want to code. I guess I don't fit either of their jobs. They're advertising a customer success and they're advertising engineering. That's not me. And instead, if you think, look, they need problem solved. So if I can come to them and say, here's my proof that I can handle onboarding 10 customers a day and I can meet that minimum requirement that's an urgent need for you. But on top of that, unlike most customer success people, I also have a technical background and I can do a little bit of coding. And though I'm not ready to be a senior engineer on your team, I can do this, this, and this that are value add above and beyond that minimum threshold. And a lot of people get in the door that way and then work their way in, or like, hey, I'm a salesperson. I can do your sales role, but I also have an accounting background. So I can deal with customers who are like relatively high level in the finance realm. And that's something that most people in that role don't bring to the table. So you find those intersections. I've seen some guy on YouTube who's like, he's like a blacksmith or something. And he has like this crazy blacksmith YouTube channel. And you think about, in the world we live in, the more you sort of niche down, the more you can find benefit where you have intersecting talent. So how many people are good YouTubers? Millions. How many people are good blacksmiths? I don't know how many, but probably a lot. How many people are both good blacksmiths and good YouTubers? Probably like two. And if you do that, you get to capture the entire global market for people who have an interest in blacksmithing and like to watch YouTube videos. And so finding those unique intersections, I think Scott Adams has a blog post called The Talent Stack that's kind of about stacking sort of general talents, specific expertise in these unique ways. And that's where you get the most return.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, that's really well said. So I guess that's probably tailored more towards entrepreneurship, finding that intersection. But you gave a really good example of how it can work in the job market in a really assertive way, right? Instead of saying, look, trust me, I fit this mold that your HR department thinks they want. And instead saying, like, I'm a person who can offer you value that you might not even realize that you need in this unique way that I have it, it is such a better approach.
I'll give you a concrete example. This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So Corne von Straten, who works on the crash team, we were not hiring at all. We weren't advertising any roles and we weren't planning to hire any roles. I get this email and he's like, hey, Crash is absolutely amazing. I've been a fan of yours throughout Praxis. I've listened to tons of your podcast episodes, read your stuff. And it was very clear from the things he said in there that he wasn't lying. It was true. He truly gets the philosophy and all that, which first of all is really exciting because I live and breathe the mission of my company every day. And when somebody clearly is as passionate about it as I am, that makes me feel good. I want to talk to them. So he signals that. And then he says, I made this pitch for you. And he made it on Crash, right? If somebody's like, hey, let me pitch you. And I'm like, you're pitching me to work at my company and you didn't even use our product, right? So he used the product, engaged with it, made a phenomenal pitch. And he's like, I'm learning to code. I want to be a junior developer. I want to come on your team as a junior developer. But I think he was smart enough to know that his developing skills were pretty rudimentary, and that most companies are not, especially small companies, they don't have the resources to train a developer. So they're only looking for seasoned developers. And so instead of just saying, hire me as a developer, which is what he really wants long-term, he said, I can do some code stuff, whatever, but I also noticed a ton of opportunity on your social media. I created all these memes and little videos for you that you can share on Twitter. Here you go. They're attached. I would love to just come on and do anything I can in marketing, in customer success, if there's no room for me as a coder. And then he's like, I will even do a 2-week free trial. Okay. So I have to respond to this guy. He took a ton of time. He gave me this great pitch. And I'm like, I feel so bad because we're not hiring. I don't want to lead him on. So I said, hey, man, this is truly an amazing pitch. We're not hiring. I don't want to get your hopes up, but I'll let you get on a call with our lead engineer and he can kind of tell you what the minimum level you would need to get a job like this in engineering. And I'll also let you get on a call with our marketing director and you guys can kind of chat about some of the stuff you've shared because there's some good ideas in here. And then I was like, I don't want to have you work for free for 2 weeks, but let's just chat with those guys for starters. So he chats with them both. They both love him. They're like, this guy's amazing. He's got hustle. Dave's like, he's not ready to be an engineer or anything like that yet, but I love his mentality. Jeremy's like, he's got all kinds of great ideas in marketing. I wouldn't mind having him help out maybe on a contract basis, just manage our Twitter account for a while and see how it goes. So I get back with him. I'm like, hey, I'll pay you for a month, small amount, and you can manage Twitter and whatever else comes up. He's like, great, I'm in. He starts doing that for a month. He starts picking up every other task. Things we didn't even ask him to. Over the weekend, he's like, oh, I'm trying to learn to code. So I built a Chrome extension that you can use for Crash. And we're like, holy cow, this is amazing. This was on our list of things we wanted to do anyway. And before long, he was indispensable. And we're like, all right, we're hiring you full time. And now he does marketing, customer success, a little bit of everything. And he's doing about 5 to 10% of his time. He's doing some coding with an express goal of increasing that as he learns more and more and more over time and working his way into the role that he wanted in the first place. But he did that by just making himself undeniably valuable to us.
Right. And the first thing is that he knew where he wanted to work. Right? That's really important. Let's talk about that, though, in terms of maybe when somebody has to do a little bit of a colder pitch, right? So you are working with a lot of people on Crash on this very pursuit, I would think. Could you just give maybe a broader example of how somebody might go about creating value, like opening this door by dropping off some value and a proposal in maybe a situation that's a little bit colder?
Yeah, for sure. Because it's not realistic that every company you're interested in, you've been like following them for 2 years and listening to all of their podcasts. You know?
Right, and you might have more flexibility, right? Because you're in an earlier stage of development. There's a lot of problems that haven't been solved. You're like, let's say it's not a startup, right? And things might be more set in their ways. So that kind of a pitch that he gave would be a little bit more difficult in that.
Yeah, there's two sides to it. On the one hand, a company as small as ours is far less likely to have the resources to be hiring, whereas big companies are hiring all the time. On the other hand, a company like ours, we don't have any HR processes or bureaucratic stuff or well-defined roles. It's very nimble and very adaptive. So you get a little bit of both. So here's a couple general pieces of advice, and then I'll give you a few like examples. At Crash, we have all these guides, career guides, crash.co/career-guides. And one of those is to finding jobs at startups. And we use the word startups pretty broadly to essentially mean fast growing companies that have a lot of opportunities and are relatively young. So they may have 10 employees, they may have several thousand employees in some cases, but they're not like Bank of America or some big, huge, you know, corporation that has a very kind of stable process. These are companies that are growing fast. It might be Uber or Lyft on the huge end, or it might be a smaller startup, as small as something like Crash. And startups, I think, are a phenomenal place to look if you want to work in those entry-level roles, because there's so much opportunity to learn. They're interesting. They're adaptive. The pitching approach, bypassing HR, tends to work very, very well with those companies. So I usually recommend kind of narrowing down the type of company you're looking for first. And if you can start with companies that are more open and more adaptive like that, and that have a lot of growth, I think that's a great leg up. And then, you know, let's say it's a larger, you know, like let's say Spotify, like think about the products that you use every day and that you love, or Netflix or Zoom. Or whatever it might be, right? Think about, okay, I love this product. I use it. I guarantee they have thousands of employees and they're probably hiring for people of all different types, technical, non-technical. Like, I'm sure they need people to handle customer support queries. I'm sure that they have, you know, accountants. I'm sure that they have all kinds of stuff. And you can go look if they have active job postings, sometimes even if they don't, and take the time to think about, what do you love about the company? What are things that are pain points you or other customers have about the company? Is there something you could build for them that just signals, and it doesn't have to be something amazing. You don't even have to get it right, so to speak, but it just signals that you're actually paying attention and thinking. I've seen designers, for example, share and tweet out, hey, this is my own version of a redesign of the Apple Music app. And they got like hundreds of people trying to hire them from other companies. I don't know if Apple ever reached out, but by showing their work, by doing something that, like, you know, took some time and something unique. And so, you know, some of the people on Crash have, for example, there's a company called Notion, which is a very fast growing startup. I don't know how many employees they have, but it's certainly in the hundreds, probably in the thousands. And it's this like really cool tool that you can, like, you can basically replace all of Microsoft Office or Google Docs, Sheets, Slides, et cetera, with this tool. And so somebody learned about Notion from using it and was like, hey, this is really cool. Maybe I want to pitch them to work there. Started kind of following their blog, trying to understand their company culture and everything, and then created a project for them in Notion using their own product, which is a great signal. Sent it to them, tweeted it at them. Hadn't heard back from them yet, but had other people who saw that say, whoa, this is really cool. We're looking for somebody in this role. And then he sent a pitch to that person. And so just this process of like a lot of people just sort of eliminate themselves from opportunities by just thinking, well, let me go see who has a job posting, instead of, let me think about what interests me. Maybe I love skateboarding, but let's think about skateboarding industry. Well, there are people that make skateboard, there are skateboard YouTube channels. There's a GoPro. That's a camera that a lot of skateboarders use to make skateboard videos. I bet GoPro is hiring. What if I made a skateboard video using a GoPro and I sent it to them, and it's in the video, I'm pitching them on why I want to come work for them and help manage their YouTube account or whatever, right? Like, many people just think, oh, well, I could never work at a place like that or whatever. But the process of saying, what if I could, what could I send them that would make them interested? It starts you on that self-empowering path. So hopefully that helps kind of answer your question a bit.
Absolutely. So I hope everybody in the audience, this will be linked in the show notes, but they can go and they can look at this career guides page. It's right in the menu at crash.co, the career launch guide. So there's basically like a toolkit of the various skills that you would want to bring to this process. And then it looks like these are almost like blueprint or mini courses for a variety of job roles. So we have customer success, software engineering, design, operations, sales, and marketing. And these are really expansive. I looked at a couple and I think this is great. Do you think there are some disciplines or some entire industries still just too bureaucratic to be receptive to something like this?
Yeah, probably, and a decreasing amount. But
I would say
probably, because you kind of never know until you try. So the obvious examples are like, you know, professions that legally require certain things, right? Like if you're not just going to go pitch a lawyer on hiring you as a lawyer, you have to have a law degree, you have to pass the bar exam. But then after you've met those requirements, I'm sure that the more creative you are in the process, the better. You know, things like becoming a doctor or whatever, there's a very well-defined, very bureaucratic, sort of cartelized, monopolized process. Going to work for a government agency, the closer to government or legally granted monopoly it is, the less likely you are to do something that's like innovative and creative. But even there, I would always say, like, don't just assume that following the rules, even if it's necessary, it may not be sufficient. So we've had people who say, well, I'm going to work for a big corporate company. They demand that you complete their application process. And I always tell them, perfect. Don't just stop there, though. Do this. First, find the hiring manager's email address. Email them a pitch directly.
Yes.
If they respond, hey, great. Why don't you go ahead and fill out the application so that you can get in our system, because we have to run all of them that way. Then you say, great, will do. Then you go apply. In the application, you say, I'm applying because Joe Schmo from your sales department told me to. Now that's a flag to whoever reviews that. Oh, I don't want to throw this one out because one of the guys in the company specifically told this person to apply. Then you email Joe back and say, hey, thanks. I went ahead and sent in my formal application. Let me know if there's anything else you can do. Then, and in your application, you can link to your pitch. Then you can find other people who work at the company and be like, hey, I'd love to ask you some questions about this role. I'm kind of looking to get into that. You know, see if you can find them on LinkedIn, whatever. And then you can say, hey, thanks for the information. That was really helpful. By the way, I went ahead and applied. Here's a pitch that I made. Now you have multiple people inside the company in both formal and informal parts of the hiring process, sharing your information back and forth, saying, hey, did you see this one guy? He sent us this video pitch. That's pretty cool. Oh, is he in the application system? Yeah, he's also in the application system. I'll go ahead and tag that, right? And like, there's no reason that you should only set, even if they demand that you send a PDF, then make your PDF a downloaded version of your crash pitch or something. Like, you can follow the rules if they demand it, but you don't have to stop there. And I think that's really key because everyone else is also following the rules. So it's very hard to stand out.
See a bunch of people standing in this long line. Actually, I don't know. Traffic is a better example. Like, why is everybody waiting in this traffic? I remember being somewhere and thinking this when all that's guaranteed is like, this is the straightest line to go where they think they're trying to go. There's all kinds of adventures to be had just by getting out of this line, right?
Well, so that's where the name actually comes from, partially. It's kind of several meanings to it, but.
Oh, okay.
You think about, you're at some party. You can make sure you meet the dress code, wait in line, and check to see if your name's on the guest list. Or you can crash the party. Just sneak in the side door, start drinking the punch, start dancing. Party crashers are way more fun, you know? Like, so the idea of like crashing the career party or rather than waiting at each gate for the gatekeeper to let you in, just crash right through the walls, crash through those gates. That's kind of the idea.
Right, yeah. But there's also something adventurous about it, right? And like, and very individualistic. Like, I just remember one of the most satisfying, I told you I went on that trip a few years ago and I think we were coming into like DC or somewhere terrible, right? Somewhere that's terrible and the traffic is terrible. So, you know, it could be California, Washington, DC. There's lots of places in the country that fit that description. But it was just more interesting to get off the highway and follow my own compass, you know, knowing that eventually I would get where I was going and I would avoid all kinds of headaches. And I said to the co-pilot, why would we just do what everybody else is doing right now?
Yeah.
This seems insane. Anything else would be better and more adventurous and more fulfilling. And it was. I think there's so many people just kind of conforming to this because they see it as what has for so long been the most reliable path. But it's not without tremendous inconveniences and sacrifices. So who do you want, who is listening to this right now from the School Sucks audience, to go to crash.co and create a profile here? I know people who've done it. I know people who are actually making pitches. And I would also think you might have a lot of people coming to Crash with, you've talked about higher opportunity costs. Like when you're young, your opportunity costs are low because there's really nothing else you can do. But right now in a changing and struggling economy, and that certainly might be the case over the next year, you might see some new types of people coming to Crash. So what's your pitch for people in my audience who have questions about either launching a career, their kids launching a career, or maybe even making some adjustments in the career they already have?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, here's who should go to crash.co. If you're actively looking for a job, an internship, or even like freelance clients, go to Crash and you can utilize these beautiful pitches and a process to manage them. We have a Slack community with a lot of feedback and advice to help you do that better, to stand out, to supercharge that process. So if you're actively seeking opportunities, and I would put a small caveat in there, I would say what we would call like crashable jobs, which is most things. Like I said, if you're going to be a doctor or work at a government bureaucracy, Crash is going to have the least amount of help for you because those are very bureaucratic. Or if you're like, hey, I'm trying to get a job at Subway as a sandwich artist, like you're just going to walk in and fill out an application. They're not going to care probably. It might help, but probably not. So if you're looking for internship, job, anything like that, if you just are about to go on the market, or if you've been on the market and you're not having success with the typical approach, come to Crash. You got to request access because we are very, very focused on serving customers who we know are going to get value out of the program. So you just fill a quick request access form. If we say this is somebody that we know we can help, we let you on the platform. And it's just $20 a month and you can cancel anytime. So like if you use it for a month and you paid $20 and you're like, I pitched 5 companies and this sucks, I'm out of here. You can just cancel and bounce and you haven't lost anything, but your $20. So it's just a kind of a tool for people who are ready to level up their job hunt. It's not easy. Like it's more work to create pitches but the results are well worth the additional effort. So if you're like, I just want to be lazy and click apply a bunch of times, Crash is not for you. It's going to demand more of you, but you're going to enjoy it more, feel more empowered, and have a better job hunt.
You're also doing something that has much better leverage than doing something over and over and over and over again that has none.
Much better. I mean, truly, people have come that have been like on the job hunt for 6 months and sent like 400 applications and not had a single interview. And then within a couple of weeks, they've had a couple interviews and they've gotten a job offer by just changing the approach.